Welcome to the Red, White, and Rude, where we're tearing into the juiciest messes Hollywood's serving up, where entertainment and politics collide. Because we all know politics is downstream of culture, and eventually it catches up. I, William Del Pilar, your conservative Latino, is just ahead of the game. And tonight, we've got Batman Part 2. It's stuck in delay hell, people. The script's a ghost. Pattinson's too busy. And DC's a circus. Then, Netflix drops a $320 million bomb with the Electric State. Let me correct myself. It's not a bomb yet. But critics are roasting it like a dumpster fire. And we have much more as well. So turn off the streaming channel and tune in, folks. It's about to get rude, raw, and real. Hello, everybody. This is William Del Pilar, and this is the Red, White, and Rude. And thank you for tuning in. Before we go on, and before I forget, do not forget yourself to like and share this podcast once you're done watching it. And bookmark grumblingsmedia.com. Grumblingsmedia.com. Bookmark it and check us out on YouTube with Rumble, Apple, Spotify, and Pandora. Under the handle Grumblings Media. Well, as I said, people, we have a great show for you tonight. So let's not waste any time and just get right on into it. Still no script for Batman 2. Years away, and the original was released in 2022. So we're 3 years since the original. So this story kind of has more twists than the Gotham Alley. What am I kidding? I'm trying to be cute, but now he's just straight. So let me break it down for you, and let's get into it and see what's really going on behind this sequel. First off, production delays. You know, look, it was directed by Matt Reeves. He was originally set to start shooting the sequel in 2025 in the UK. But Robert Pattinson, he told Deadline during a recent interview that production is now delayed until the end of 2025 and is scrapping the earlier plans. And this is from previous delays already. It has a history of delays. This isn't the first setback. And there are so many delays for the sequel, suggesting there are ongoing issues. And I'm trying to think. Reeves began working on the script in late 2022. And they still don't have one. It's still not finished. They're implying that this could be a key factor in the delays. Yeah, I think there's no implication. It is. And even Pattinson was a bit sarcastic, stating he might be nearing retirement age by the release. Now, people joke about that, but these actors have a shelf life in the ability to do these movies. I thought Daniel Craig for James Bond, man, if they had been on their toes, they could have done maybe one or two more movies. He was getting tired of it. I tell you what, man, these actors, once they make it big, they get so full of themselves. Bond is what made you, Daniel. That's all you'll ever be good for. You'll have a few hits here and there, but that's what you'll go down in history. I just wish they had been faster with it, but Hollywood's become this ugly, slow behemoth. In fact, Jerry Bruckheimer and Steven Spielberg were talking about it. It's next impossible to get movies greenlighted. And then when they do, there seems to be delay after delay after delay. Now, there are unconfirmed rumors of friction between Reeves and the DCU boss, James Gunn, meaning there may be some creative differences in stalling this. I got to be honest, Reeves would be bumped out, but Reeves is the reason the first one was so different. So that was truly the first Dark Knight adventure, was Pattinson and Reeves. You know, Reeves directing, Pattinson starring. And the reason I say that, those three, the English guy, I forget his name, but the last three were terrible. I mean, but they made buku money, but they were just, I mean, Bane was a weak-ass Bane. That's nothing like the comic. It was just terrible writing. The fight scenes were terrible. Ooh. I mean, and it was because of the suit, but they were terrible to choreograph. It was some of the worst TV. Those movies will go down in history 20, 30, 40, 50 years from now as jokes, you know? In fact, who was that actor? Let me figure this one out. I'm embarrassed. I forgot. Christian Bale. The most overrated actor to play a superhero role in my lifetime. And I've been there since Adam West and Burt Ward. So there's also broader implications here. You know, Pattinson, he was pretty busy. He filming Mickey 17, which is terrible according to the reviews. It just was released. Number one in the weekly movie box office returns, but a very weak number one. It's not going to make its money back is what they're saying. It may do half of what it costs to make. Then another one called Die My Love and the drama. So he's been busy himself. And I don't blame him. You know, he's also going to start working on Christopher Nolan's The Odyssey soon. So he's not holding back with looking for the gigs. And that could impact Batman in terms of when they want to film in case he's already locked into something. Then you have Reeves' film is going to be competing against another Batman movie, and that's Andy Muschietti's The Brave and the Bold. And that's rumored to be shooting late this year as well. So you got a crowded Batman landscape and Gunn's influence over the DCU slate. Look, I'm not a big Gunn fan. I think he did great with Guardians of the Galaxy, but to give him full reign like this and make changes, I mean, Henry Cavill getting rid of him, you moron. But I'm not digressing. My point here is I'm not a big fan of where the DC universe is going in terms of Gunn leading it. But I don't need him messing around with Batman. It's not in the Batman universe. Let it be. Let the director and lead actor do what they need to do to continue making that a dark drama. That's it, folks. The Batman Part 2 is caught in a storm of script delays. Pattinson has a packed slate. And maybe there's some DCU tension. It's a wild one, don't you think? So tell me what you think. Tell me what you think, what's holding it up. Hit us up in the comments or the social media commentary when you see this post. So let's get on to the next. Netflix is lost. A $320 million for a movie that's panned. So let's zero in on The Electric Slate. I like the electric boogie. I did that once or twice at a nightclub. I was like, man, I did this. For those of you that remember the electric boogie, but I don't know, 80s, 90s. Yeah, probably the 90s. The 90s, yeah. Anyway, nothing to do with this. Just Electric State, Electric Boogie. I don't know why I thought that. But let's throw in on the Electric State. And that's Netflix's latest, mega budget swing from the Russo Brothers. I mean, that's a crazy price tag. It has a stat cast. Spoiler alert. A whole lot of critics shaking their heads. You know, let me break it down for you. So let's jump into this sci-fi roller coaster and see what everybody's talking about. So The Electric State drops on Netflix March 14th. So we're still a few days away. Yeah, we're not quite a week, but almost a week. And it's their priciest movie ever made at $320 million. That's more than some of the biggest tempo movies ever made in Hollywood. It beats out the Avengers Infinity War at $300 million, The Gray Man at $200 million. This is crazy. And the Russo brothers are behind it. You know, they got Millie Bobby Brown playing Michelle. She's a teen on a mission in a robot packed 90s dystopia to find her brother. And it's straight out of Simon Stollenhag's graphic novel. Chris Pratt is also in it. So they got, I mean, Millie Brown, nobody gives a rat's ass. But Chris Pratt can drive the movie. Nobody, you know what's sad? There's very few females that can actually drive a movie. But critics are tearing it apart. Again, it's a teen on a mission in a robot-packed 90s dystopia to find her brother. It's sitting at a brutal 19% on Rotten Tomatoes. Now, this is the critics. You know, the critics trash Gray Man. I kind of enjoyed it. Thought there were some dumb scenes done by Chris Evans that were over the top. But overall, I enjoyed it. But it's also the Russo brothers' all-time low. Worse than Cherry at 37% or The Gray Man at 45% and barely above their old flop You, Me, and Dupree at 20%. Metro's calling it soulless nostalgia bait. Variety says it's a sanitized mess and IndieWire stopped it with a D-, saying it's relentlessly stale. My issue is the cost. $320 million price tag? Now, they've been throwing a lot of cash for a lot of big-name stars that have produced mediocrity. I mean, like The Gray Man. So they bet on star power and flash over whether it'll actually be good. The Ryan Reynolds ones The one with The Rock was half decent. That was about it. The one with the guy who played The Incredible Hulk was terrible. The Apollo Project or something like that. So to me, it's a lot of mediocrity on television. There are a lot of second and third rate directors are being given big budgets. And then what you're having is with the top rate directors who produce big hits in Hollywood, they don't care about the quality. It's like, I'm God for this production. And they don't care about the quality as much as I'm God. You know, and they're churning out crap. So normally Netflix is about $50 million to $200 million for originals. And that's $200 million, that's still way too much for streaming service. For streaming service, you get a good story that will actually work more so than a flash in the pan. So obviously the Electric State is them going over the top, going for it all, stat cast and production. But it's not looking for the critics like it's going to win many viewers. I don't disagree or agree because critics and I don't always agree with it. So, you know, a little bit more detail on what the movie is about. Okay, as I said, it's a sci-fi adventure. It's set in a retro-futuristic 1990s dystopia. It follows Michelle, a teenage orphan. Again, that's Millie Bobby Brown. And she teams up with a quirky smuggler. Quirky? That screams Chris Pratt. And there's a robot sidekick. The crossover, A Robot Ruled America, and they're searching for her missing brother. Again, it's based on Simon Stollenberg's graphic novel. Supposedly, it's a visual wild ride blending nostalgia with high-stakes action. According to this critics, it's a big bore. So there's also voices and supporting roles from stars like Giancarlo Esposito, great in Breaking Bad in that one episode where he finally faces off with the main protagonist. Stanley Tucci, veteran. Anthony Mackie, Captain America doesn't represent Captain America to him. And it drops on March 14th, so a few days from now. That's the story of the Electric State, folks. $320 million gamble that's landed with a thud for the Russo brothers, at least for the critics. Netflix went all in, but these critics have not. What do you think? Does this sound like a hidden gem worth a stream or another overpriced miss? Once you see it and watch it, drop your takes in the comments or hit us up online on social media. Blue Bloods sequel is confirmed. Donnie Wahlberg, the lead, the cast. So, there's an upcoming Blue Bloods spinoff, Boston Blue. And, you know, the original series wrapped up after 14 seasons. And I'll be honest, I was bummed to see it wrap up. Excuse me. I wasn't left as wanting more as much as, why did you end it? Why? It was too expensive. Despite the ratings, it was too expensive. But CBS is bringing us the sequel, the spinoff. Rather, not sequel, spinoff. So, let me give you a breakdown of it. So Blue Bloods, obviously, for those of you who are fans, such as myself. And why am I a fan? I'm a fan because it's so not real, but it's so how you wish the world was. You have your problem, they good guys solve it, everybody's happy, family united, happy ending. You know, it's a fantasy world. So, and that's what I watch television to escape. So again, Blue Bloods concluded its 14th season run in September and December of this past year, 2024. It seems longer than just 3 months. And obviously some fans were emotional, but they were hopeful because spinoffs were talked about. Another quick point. When I first started watching Blue Bloods, it was as a joke. My wife's father was watching them. And he came to live with us before he passed on. Rest in peace, Tony. Big Tony. This was one of his favorite shows. And he was a hardcore bleeding leftist. And it hooked me in. At first, I watched it, then poked fun at it. You know, then I got into it. It's just that type of feeling. Obviously, most America did. One of the 14 seasons, today's television, that's incredible. So, 2 months later, CBS announced Boston Blue, which ironically is going to star Danny Reagan, who is Danny Wahlberg, who lives in Boston. Oh, he lives in Chicago now, but the family's from Boston. And it's a spinoff centered, again, on Donnie Wahlberg's character, Danny Reagan. So it's an extension of the lineage of Blue Bloods. So it's given a straight-to-series order, meaning it's locked in for the season. There's no pilot. There's no couple episodes. CBS is that confident in its potential. And it will do well early on. So, again, Boston Blue will follow Danny Reagan as he relocates from New York City to Boston. Obviously, that's a given with Boston Blue. And he's transferring from the NYPD to the Boston Police Department. And that makes perfect sense from this perspective. Danny's son, one's already in college. In fact, he's a super brainy guy in real life, like 2 degrees and stuff. So he was making minimal appearances on the show. In fact, I think he was doing his residency for a surgeon. And the other one was just doing the once a week. And then he was on his way to college, I think, in the final season. Or the second to final season. Either way, they were sporadic. His wife was dead. She was killed off. And it left him, they left open the relationship he was pursuing with his partner. And that was open. So he's the easiest one to relocate. Erin, the sister, had roots there as a Boston DA. She just, and her lover boy was working in New York City as well. And Jamie, the youngest brother, just locked in with his wife living there. His family. So it was kind of made sense that he'd be the one to leave Boston. So he'll partner with somebody named Detective Lena Peters. So obviously not his old partner, you know, and she's the eldest daughter of a prominent law enforcement family. And I guess, you know, maybe a new dynamic in terms of Reagan family legacy, meaning they're going to cross over with somebody else's legacy. I'm trying to think here. The Pete Gans, the Gregors, the Ragers, I don't know. Anyway, it's supposedly going to blend Danny's fiery personality with the challenge of the new city. I got news for you, bro. You're going to get shot and the killer's going to get away with it in Boston if y'all follow this current Boston mayor's real-life belief system. I mean, this Boston mayor just out the other day, cops shot and killed somebody who was with a knife. Where he was threat, legit shooting. She's like saying, I'm sorry to the family of the bad guy. It's like, get over yourself, you stupid piece of ignorant trash. So, his fire personality is going to integrate with the city and the challenges there. And supposedly, it's going to shift focus to his professional. It's going to shift the focus more to his professional life from the family-centric drama Blue Bloods. And I find that odd when I research that because it was pretty equal. You only saw the family life in certain sections. Man, I guess the professional life because he'll be dealing, there's no family there. So from that perspective, okay. So obviously Danny Wahlberg returns as Danny Reagan. And I guess the executive producer, Jerry Bruckheimer, is going to be attached to it. And I think he may have been, I'm not sure if he was attached with the original. But, you know, they got the Blacklist and L.A.'s Finest. Never heard of L.A.'s Finest. They're the showrunners, two individuals from there. And no other cast members have been announced. You know, no confirm. There's no word on if we're going to see Maria Baez or Jamie Reagan. I'm sure we're going to see some cameos, maybe some movie. They're going to have a cameo, him moving there. That's going to be a given. You know, so the fans obviously are happy. Hey, I'm not happy. I'm like, okay, I'm content. You know, I'll check it out. But man, I really enjoyed the original. The original was starting to really reach towards the end, but I still wanted more of it. Again, it's my escape into how I wish the world really was, you know. So this show evolved from a completely different concept. It was going to be an LAPD officer moving to Boston. And they retooled it to fit the Blue Bloods universe after its cancellation. So, in fact, they probably said, hey, retool this. We like the concept. We want to keep Blue Bloods. You add value by attaching the Blue Blood name to the show versus the show going alone. And the people selling the show, they didn't care as long as it's Bob. Make sense? I'm looking forward to it. I'm not sure when it'll air, but if it's I would not be shocked if it's in the 2025 lineup. At the latest being a January type show, mid-season show to start it off. But that, then again, it's got a full order, so odds are it should start at the 2025 season. Now, let me check my notes here. Well, lo and behold, I was right. I was giving you the educated guess, and I was correct. It's going to air this season at the beginning of the season. Excuse me, or as the midseason, meaning January, we don't know. But that's a rundown on Boston Blue. So it's clear that CBS is going to be banking on Danny Reagan's appeal to keep fans hooked. It's why they completely changed the concept of a different show to tie it and create it around the Blue Bloods character. And it's going to blend a new setting, hopefully with the familiarity of the Blue Blood storytelling mode. So again, production's already, I didn't say this, but production is already moving forward. And we will see it this fall or early next year. Okay. Key issues in Justin Baldoni's lawsuit against the New York Times and Blake Lively denied. So, Justin Baldoni's $250 million libel lawsuit against the New York Times, that's teetering on being dismissed. And on this, on the flip side, Blake Lively's attempt to fish or broadly probe Baldoni's communications is curtailed by the court, meaning nixay. So, the judge overseeing the Baldoni $250 million lawsuit against the Times, he granted a pause in evidence gathering on March 5th. And he sided with the Times' request to halt discovery. Completely bad decision. Completely wrong decision on the surface. And this followed Baldoni's claims that the Times published a defamatory article based on Blake Lively's sexual harassment allegations. And they did, allegedly, based on everything we've seen. On the surface, now that more information has come out, it's clear that the Times did not do any research as proper journalism dictates. And the judge is failing to see that from what I've been researching and reading. So the pause delays Baldoni's efforts to substantiate his case while the Times puts it to dismissal. The problem is you have a lot of activist judges, especially in these blue districts, and they don't follow the law. They interpret the law to benefit what they want to see, and at times they create new law. You want to know the problem with our legal situation? It's because I want to say a Fifth Circuit or Ninth Circuit judge created a law by interpreting it to create something new. It's like Justice John Roberts creating new law by stating Obama's Obamacare was a tax. Something was a tax. When Obamacare judges themselves said, no, it's not. He created a new law that it was a tax. So judges do this all the time. And this judge, he did signal a strong inclination to dismissing the case. That the newspaper has a strong argument for dismissal. No, they do not. What you're seeing here is an activist pig of a judge. They're saying that that the accusations, their defense is that its reporting on Lively's accusations was responsibly conducted, contrasting with Baldoni's dissertation. Look, if they never reached out to Baldoni, then it was not properly and responsibly conducted. That in and of itself is it. Door shut. You're going to trial. But this judge is an activist and is okay with the Times lying again. And lie they have. Looking from Twitter, every time from 2016 through 2020, all these sources that were anonymous and they claim against Donald Trump, Russia collusion is the easiest one. But there's dozens of others were all proven to be untrue or never failed to materialize. The Times has a massive record of this. And here's a judge siding with them. All right, let's move on to Lively's legal team. Look, Lively's legal team, this is a different case. They went to a judge saying, we need to go find and gain access to Baldoni's communications because I'm Blake Lively. I'm Hollywood's royalty. You see my man? I call him the cuck. Deadpool. Because he does everything I ask him and tell him to. Ryan Reynolds. Anyway, the judge said, no, no, señorita, you cannot, you and Green Lantern cannot have access to the backlog of his communications. They were just trying to fish. They wanted a complete carte blanche ability to go check out every single thing he tweeted, you know. But anyway, my research all came out to Lively's push for a broad discovery versus the court's narrow focus. There is no narrow focus on this. This is just basic legalities. That you don't have a right to go on a fishing expedition not knowing what you're looking for, just hoping you stumble upon something. That's not how the law works. I mean, Lively's attempt to access all of Justin Baldoni's messages, that's a clear overreach. And obviously the court recognized it as a fishing expedition without any justification. And on Baldoni's side, the potential loss is harsh. $250 million lawsuit against the Times hinges on proving journalistic malpractice, which on the surface, it looks like they don't have to do much to prove. But an activist pig of a judge, obviously does not believe in the Constitution, is looking at at just dismissing it without even looking at all the information. Look, CNN, Meta, ABC, they face payouts for false narratives. Why should the New York Times escape when they're just as guilty, if not more so? Allegedly. The Times will dodge accountability here, or it looks like it will, because of an activist judge overlooking evident bias. Though hopefully, if he can, an appeals court could shift the outcome. If Baldoni's evidence of collusion holds up. So I'm one for, gotta have the evidence. All right, Reddit stock dropping like a rock. Is this a blip or cause for worry? So Reddit stock has been on a roller coaster lately. This past week, it took a drop, and there's bigger story brewing beneath the numbers. You know, there's a February stumble, a platform spiraling into chaos, and investors and potential buyers are looking at it and going on edge. So let's break that down. So this past Friday, last week, say, Reddit stock fell from 11.11% to $133.98 after insider selling by the chief accounting officer. It then tanked another 19%. So it already dropped 11% to $134 a share and then dropped another 19%. So in essence, it has dropped 30% since February. There's 102.4 million daily users. It's short of the 103 million they thought. It's not a big drop, but here's the problem. There's a reason for this drop, and it may become faster and quicker. And why? Look, it's a socialist, authoritarian moderator mess. Look, the platform has lost its soul. Moderators are banning conservatives, Elon Musk fans, and anyone off the socialist script. You know, over 100 subreddits, Axing, X-Links, for example, after the inauguration, they've turned what used to be a diverse hub into nothing but a chaotic echo chamber, and management does not seem to want to step in. I don't know how the structure works, but on management, I hire a team. Your job is to go through, hire a team of 4 to 5 people. You start managing, not them managing, but managing the moderators by looking at what they're doing and just banning them for life and warning the new moderators. That's just how business works. This is not a free-for-all. They created an authoritarian playground. And Reddit is so desperate to sell, they're letting it go because the numbers are dropping, but not enough to ultimately scare off people. They can keep the wool over the eyes. But there's also an advertiser disconnect they may not understand. Look, when I ran my business and another business, certain advertisers did not want to advertise for a variety of reasons dealing with their brand. Reddit's a techie, left-leaning meme crowd, and it doesn't necessarily match the mainstream buyers. There's also a lot of anarchists on there, meaning they're not going to – you can't persuade them on anything. You know, yeah, mainstream like Ford or Walmart, they had a $1.2 billion ad hoc from 2024, but that's shrinking. And brands may look at this as, y'all too toxic now. You're banning, kicking people off. We saw what happened to Bud Light. So they're thinking of this mess. The political winds have shifted. These authoritarian little leftist cucks, and I do mean that, living in their base mama's basement, or you know what I notice about young men today. They can't pick a woman up to save their lives. They can't communicate with women. You know, I get hit on at times. And then I think about it, I'm like, wow, they're looking for a man. They're looking for somebody who can actually converse with them, somebody who's actually accomplished something. They don't want these basement-built kids who can make a meme, but that's about it. They don't even know how to say hello without, you know. It's like a bizarro version of Jerry Mathers Leaving the Beaver, you know. So anyway, I'm digressing. But the point is, there's a big disconnect there, and it's also going to affect the advertisers who are looking at the types of people they want to buy their products. That may not be the Reddit brand. And buyers are wary of a niche fading audience. Is it fading? Will it survive? Yes. But it may take a big hit here if the company itself doesn't take a step in to stop the madness of the moderators. Experts still say it's a good deal. They're saying that Reddit's making more cash per user, $421 per user, which is up 23%. But that's because they have so many users. But the ads click-through rate is probably some of the poorest in internet history. I'm on Reddit for one group, and I don't go there all the time, just when something comes up and it's a game I no longer play, it's no longer updated, so I haven't been on there in a while. But when I go on there, it's like one ad after another, boom, 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 just jammed with them. But they're smart. They post them within the post, so you have to see them. It's brilliant. But that said, it's only good for the Walmarts or the Fords or the bigger brands, conglomerates, because they want to brand their products and services. And if their brands don't align with those viewers, they're going to lose out on some massive contracts. What could happen to Reddit naturally is what they artificially tried to do to Elon, meaning it was astroturfing with Elon, but this is maybe more organic. So word on the street, analysts blame the user growth myth for Google's algorithm. That's bull. You know, that can equate to a certain amount. But even then, what they're saying is we're dependent on something else to bring these people in. I just don't think they're growing. Here's the other issue. Generationally, different social media platforms come up, and as you age out, you'll stick with those, but the new people will go elsewhere. Reddit's kind of avoided that to a degree, but nothing is immune forever. Is this the beginning of that trend? I don't know. You know, but this is fixable. But here's what is it. Huffman sold. Steve Huffman dumped 500,000 shares for $81 million. Was he cashing out on the IPO buzz? Or maybe he sees a chaotic future? Or is he just saying, I need a little bit of cash flow. There's a yacht I want to buy. We don't know, but it raises red flags. Because if that IPO was going to blow up, he would have kept it. So this is a messy story. A stock hit by insider moves and user growth flops. A platform drowning in moderator-driven chaos, anarchism. And a future that's got analysts and buyers second-guessing. It's still a smart buy, many are saying, but these questions are there. With its audience shifting, bands piling up, and a brand taking a beating, RDDT is looking like a high-stakes roll of the dice right now. There you have it, my friends. Those are the stories of the week. Now let's move on to what I like, the Rude Rundown. That's my lightning round where I take a topic and I give you a quick hit and quick take on it. All truthful from my perspective, of course, but I'm right. I'm William De Pilar, your conservative Latino. Oh, man. I was just doing another podcast. I told him my favorite Latino words, essay. I stole that from the Mexicans when I learned it when I came here. I never heard it as a Puerto Rican Panamanian prior to coming here. And I said, is that what y'all call yourselves? He goes, yeah, it's slang term. That was years ago. Who knows what it means now or if they even use it anymore. Anyway, let's get back on down to the Rude Rundown. Rundown numero uno, cable news rating reveals a shift in viewer preferences. Not really. That was what the title came up with. But after thinking about it, not really. It's a snapshot of March 5th, but there was a little bit of news. Fox News again dominated, but the five surpassed 5 million viewers. Now, you need to understand, for cable news, that's like 20 million watching a highlighted episode of Seinfeld on NBC. I mean, that's what that 5 million means. MSNBC and CNN, they obviously always trailed. You know, it's a Fox News surge. You know, see, and this is the reason I want to compare it. 5 million total viewers there. Rachel Maddow, 2.1 million. Anderson Cooper. Figures weren't available at the time. But the point is, 2.1 million is Maddow. That's their best show at the prime time of 9 p.m. 8 p.m., I think, is 5 p.m. 5 p.m. is the 5. So they're just destroying MSNBC's best show. It just shows how strong they are in viewership. The Maddow is its top performer, 2.1 million, and they both leave behind. There comes a point where something has to happen. For Comcast, they've done it. They're spinning MSNBC off. And something's going to happen with Rachel Maddow's contract of $25 million to do one show a week. Once that spins off and they're on their own, that contract will immediately change. I wouldn't be surprised if they're negotiating something now. But her Maddow, she doesn't need this. She doesn't want it. That's why she's doing one show a week. She wants to be part of the pop culture and getting her word out there, but she doesn't really want to work it. So I think she'll take a buyout, do some specials here or there, and retire. Nobody's watching her anyway. CNN just got a completely clean house and they won't. And my whole point is Fox is still dominating. Kudos to the five for surpassing 5 million. And here's the other thing is they are literally doubling MSNBC and CNN in the demographics. It's running around 300,000, you'll see for Fox. Then you'll see like 120,000. Once you hit 100,000, that's a death knell. Meaning, that's when advertisers go, whoa, 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 why are we advertising on here? You know? So there's some serious work to be done in that demo as well. In fact, let me pull up, this is the rundown. So the point overall is that these leftist networks like MSNBC, CNN, they realize there's no market for news caught in constant lies. Or I'm sorry, until they realize there's no market for news caught in constant lies. And they're constantly caught. Case in point, CNN, Jake Tapper, you know, he was throwing people off air. Laura Trump just threw her off the air in the segment. Goodbye. You know, when she brought up Dementia Joe's dementia. And what happens? Jake Tapper getting ready to release a book. The inside story. Biden's dementia. You know, they just lie and they lie and they lie. Anderson Cooper. You know, Nicole Wallace. I hope that poor 13-year-old doesn't have to deal with shooting, getting shot at or something on the Capitol. It's like, just enjoy the fact that a 13-year-old cancer survivor was made an honorary Secret Service member and enjoy the moment. Instead, she makes it politics. People are tired of this. Joy the Racist Reed was canceled. Nobody was watching her. Until they realize this, they're going to continue to struggle. They both networks, CNN and MSNBC, need a complete reboot. They need to ditch the bias anchors and progressive hacks, i.e. the reporters, for balanced Republicans and Democrats who don't push socialist authoritarianism bent on shredding the Constitution. And you can have both and just have a fierce show of back and forth that's moderated really well. People will tune in. I do plan on having an episode on what these two networks need to do to completely clean house and become relevant again from a business standpoint. I'm just a junkie in that. The rude rundown number two, Microsoft's initial stance and NewsGuard ties. Okay, look. Microsoft tangled. They went toe-to-toe with Ted Cruz and lost. They promised to cut ties but are still cozying up the NewsGuard. NewsGuard is a leftist promoting news source. I figured we'd dig into this. It's not making the big heavy news, but this is important for you guys because this shapes our thoughts and our processes. So Microsoft told Cruz that it's disavowing its affiliation with NewsGuard. And NewsGuard is a censorship group. They censor the news. And they only spit out leftist news. They go, we do the work for you. Yeah, by censoring conservative views and spitting out leftist views. I mean, supposedly, technically, I got to say allegedly, but it's all true. Cruz announced this February 6th. And what are we in? March 9th, a month later. And they're still supporting it. So this relationship runs deep. They've been promoting this software for years, including a recommendation on its Educator Center last month. So this is terrible. Terrible. NewsGuard is a leftist. You need to contact Ted Cruz's office, tell him, hey, what the hell's happening? Push Ted Cruz to follow up on this. And its track record has been documented. They give its Federalist a 12.5% score. And that's a paper that backs everything up and does journalism properly. One that actually does news as it should. It's conservative, but they back everything up. There's no one who can pick at the Federalist and go, that's not true, when they back it all up. Can't say that about The Beast or whatever it's called, or Newsweek or others that they promote. So in essence, Microsoft disavowal looks more like a half step, saying one thing to Cruz, but keeping NewsGuard in play until someone calls them out, and that's what needs to happen. Tell me your take on this flip-flop. And while you're at it, tell me your take on the news. What does MSNBC and CNN need to do to catch up? The rundown number three, Hamilton's cancellation at Kennedy Center fuels political divide. Okay, Lin-Manuel Miranda, un idiota estúpido puta, and the producers of Hamilton have canceled performances at the Kennedy Center in protest of the Trump administration's replacement of its leadership. Richard Grenell is in-house. Richard Grenell, who's helped free our hostages, he's done more for America than than Miranda has ever done. But anyway, this is spotlighting a growing rift between progressive elites and conservative shifts in cultural institutions. And I don't care. Neither does the public. You know, the cancellation is framed as a stand against perceived political bias. Really, it's been a political pure leftist. When you're allowed to piss on the cross or put things like that, but heaven forbid you can't touch anything progressive, who's actually creating the bias? It's Democrats. This is actually a self-inflicted wound. Rather than engaging in echoing a broader progressive view in public, they refuse. I'm not going to play. Look, the truth of this is nothing but Democrat hate. The data shows Trump has helped minorities and the country more than any Hamilton actor, more than Obama, more than Biden, more than Bush ever did. In fact, all Bush did was bring death and war. And Obama helped continue it. And Trump shut it down. And honestly, more than the Democrat Party. This is the Hamilton cast and its main actor, Manuel Miranda, trying to be relevant, making themselves play the activist do-gooder. But in reality, they're just creating more hate, which is all they're good at and all they're full of. They're vile, hateful bigots, and some are racist. And they would see America subjugate Anglos and, in some rare cases, heterosexuals. This is terrible and a disgrace and an embarrassment to what the country is supposed to represent. We welcome and love everybody. But does that mean I want you teaching transgenderism to a 6-7-year-old kid? No. Do I buy into you? They're adult enough to make their own decisions. Then they turn around and tell us, those kids, what are they doing there? They're too young to be making these decisions about what physical responsibility is. You see, hypocrites. Again, a terrible and a disgraceful part of America that we don't need. Leftist like Manuel Miranda, un idiota estúpido. I'm not going to say the other word. Rundown number 4. Oh, God, another one. Where's my producer? Where's my intro? What are you giving me, man? James Taylor's recent take on Facebook shows another elitist entertainer on their knees for Volodymyr Zelensky, dictator at large for the Ukrainian country. So in a March 2025 Facebook post titled, Thoughts on Ukraine. I'm sorry, I'm playing his part and I'm still trying to think. James Taylor breaks his usual apolitical stance, which is a crock. He is very political, to lament the U.S. reversal of support for Ukraine against Putin's invasion. Again, he's lying. Zelensky said, when Trump said, look, you're not going to survive with us, that's what Putin said. I would last 4 weeks. Trump says, okay, I'm going to pull on myself and see how long you last. No, please, President Trump, don't pull anything. Because, you know, they can't win the war without us. Trump is trying to prevent more deaths. If this becomes the forever war that Zelensky wants, that the Europeans want, that James Taylor's too stupid to realize he's fighting for, you're going to have hundreds of thousands more deaths. You're going to have a Ukraine without anybody to reproduce, without a country to stand. Seems like the Europeans are good with that. Seems like Democrats are good for that. What is it, man? What is it, population control? Either way, they have suffered some serious casualties, which no one wants. But Zelensky is responsible for. He said, we don't need you. He said that in so many words at the Oval Office. Well, it's being shown that he does. Anyway, Taylor, like a little vajayjay, defends Ukraine's resistance. Zelensky is a hero for locking up those priests, for burning those books, for allowing people to die in jail, for kidnapping and conscripting the young and the old. He is a hero. How could the U.S. abandon such a hero dictator? Oops, cuck. He accuses Putin, Trump, and Musk of conspiring this time. He's too stupid to realize geopolitics and the history of what's happened, how NATO has encroached since the 1990s when they promised Russia, we will not encroach, and they encroach. And for those of you guys who say, well, so what? So what is, this is ramifications. We are not going to go to war with Russia, a nuclear power. Europe didn't have a pot to piss in terms of armaments, weapons, or even manpower. He laments America's shift from a cradle of liberty to a nation that stabs its champions in the back. We're not stabbing any champion in the back. For you to call him a champion shows how disgusting of a pig you are. James Taylor's no stranger to groveling for Democrats. He jetted out to France to croon James Taylor after Kerry Beckett for the Paris climate talks. I needed to sing about the climate gases. Yeah, does that include China and India?
No.
Oh, are they going to pay into the climate fund?
No, we're actually paying them.
Freaking moron. He said nothing but a clueless progressive pig with Trump hating TDS gone wild. James Taylor gone wild. 999. Call 1-800. You see James Taylor flashing that bald spot. He's just another Hollywood loser cheering Ukraine from his cushy mansion while taxpayers foot the bill and the entertainment industry crumbles under their bigotry. Rundown number 5, David Schwimmer confronts Hollywood silence on anti-Semitism. Look, David Schwimmer's, he's famed from Friends. He passionately addressed the surge in anti-Semitism at a recent conference, ADL. They're not anybody's friends. They are very, very bigoted themselves. If it's not Jewish, they want to throw you under the bus. And I love the Jewish people. The Jewish people love me. They, how can they not love William Depilar, the conservative Latino? But my point is ADL is nothing but a lobbyist group. They have siphoned off millions and millions of money dollars that could have gone to programs here just through the sheer power of the lobby effort. But that said, they came into existence because everybody seems to hate them. And that's what Schwimmer is not age well, neither one, poor guy. Anyway, so he's trying to create a call for action. It was the Anti-Defamation League's Never Is Now conference. He urged Jewish Hollywood figures who won't say a word because they're scared to upset the Palestinian supporters. But he does acknowledge that there are some private efforts, but he needs them to come forward, he says. The personal toll of speaking out, including threats and abandonments by presumed allies, is what that results in by not speaking out. And he says, my career privilege obligates me to use my voice against bigotry and violence. Actually, that's good. I'm teasing him because privilege. I'm tired of hearing about privilege. But he urges others to simply express their support for Jewish friends without needing to resolve broader geopolitical conflicts. So in that essence, say something but don't do anything. Typical Hollywood. The Democrats and progressives' apparent tolerance of anti-Semitism reflects an alarming acceptance of bigotry that demands swift, severe repercussions akin to those for anti-black racism. For those, they, in other words, we need to destroy the anti-Semites as we destroyed racism towards black. And people, contrary to what the bigots tell you, racism from white America towards blacks is literally non-existent. If it wasn't from 2012 to 2016, I want to say, 2018, right around there, there were 400 race hoaxes. And another one just got exposed a few weeks ago. If racism was so bad, why do they need to make up racism? Anyway, I'm digressing. Schwimmer's right that unchecked hate on campuses lacking consequences is only going to escalate this dangerous trend. And it needs to end. And President Trump is doing something about it. Rundown 6. Harry Potter fans divided over a Papaya Esadu's casting as Severus Snape. So, the rumor casting of British actor Papaya Esadu as Severus Snape in HBO's upcoming Harry Potter. I don't know if I pronounced those right. I'm not a Harry Potter fan. I know this is big news, and my niece was like, you got to cover this. So, there's a Harry Potter TV series that was announced this past March. You know, approaching him, and it's ignited a firestorm of debate, challenging expectations set by J.K. Rowling's book descriptions and Alan Rickman's iconic portrayal. So what people are saying is a mismatch. Well, blacks say of whites, it's cultural appropriation. So that's what some whites are saying. No, please, not another DEI, not cultural appropriation, not that. So you're running the gamut for everything here. You know, they're saying, and it's based on his appearance, because I guess she's very detail when she talks about the appearance of these people. Pale skin, greasy black hair, and a hooked nose. If I wasn't, wow, that sounds very stereotypical of how people denigrate Jews. JK, a little bit of anti-Semitism? I don't know. You just see that? I'm like, whoa. But anyway, the fans are saying that's horrible casting and blackwashing, with some pleading for Rowling to intervene. Look, she's overseen this. So I'm sure they consulted her. I don't know, but I would imagine. Supposing she's involved in this. So while backlash dominates, some defend Esadu's talent and theatrical background, noting his age aligns closer to the book Snape than Rickman's. Well, Rickman's dead. They wanted Adam Driver, who would have been perfect for the role. Visually, he aligned with what is described. And, you know, I'm not going to watch this, but here's what can happen. They come in, he can blow the top off the roof and win people over. We'll see. I guess overall, my problem with this is you have an actor casting a role on a surface that he doesn't fit. And in today's affirmative action world or DEI world, many, including Black and Latinos, will question, why make this out of the norm higher? Meaning, I as a Latino go, yeah, that's not how he's supposed to be, then why do it? I know why. I mean, he doesn't fit the book's description. And minorities, I have cousins that are some of the worst at accusations of cultural appropriation. I'm like, really? And you're wearing those denims I bought you that are American-made? Yeah, come on, think again. If he pulls it off, all this will be forgotten. But if he doesn't, well, it's going to be another black mark for minorities. As a Latino, what bothers me is every time a minority is elevated, now it's affirmative action or DEI. And there's legit reasons for giving that question or asking. The only way we don't do it is we get rid of that and we hire on merit. And then we punish those who don't hire on merit. And yes, J.K. Rowling is overseeing this project, so it has her blessings. So you fans can complain all you want, but this is what it is. I don't care. I'm not a fan of the series. It was just after my time as a child, and I'm not one of these geeks, nerds with no life that's going to read Harry Potter. Oh, my God. I'm a damn old man. Running down number 7, Amazon's James Bond TV spinoff. Ooh, this would be good and bad. Creative control shifts, sparse controversy. For all of you that don't know, Amazon has taken over creative control. They call the shots now with the Bond franchise. Their recent acquisition of the full creative control over the James Bond franchise from producers Broccoli and Michael G. Wilson, and that was finalized with a $1 billion deal. These people are old. They want to go retire now. And that's opened the door to proposed TV spinoff. Like Miss Moneypenny and Felix Leiter. I can see Felix. That's about it right now. Q, you know, the adventures of Q in his, I can see a web series, a short series, you know, based off Q in the experiment. I view Q looking like the Minions. So before the deal, Amazon did pitch off multiple spinoff ideas, including the Moneypenny series, a Leiter show, and even a female 007 project. And they were all rejected. And they prioritize theatrical films over streaming expansions. And that's something. James Bond cannot afford to be diluted. These movies cost way too much off their stupidity. And the profit margin slim to none there. And you start diluting the product. And then you start pissing people off with bullcrap. It's going to hurt the main movie. So they're going to have a real problem there. And they're probably going to screw it up before somebody realizes. But at the end of the day, you can go anywhere with this. And Amazon, who pushes a woke DEI agenda, see rings of power, and is willing to bastardize and destroy anything or anyone's original work, will do that indeed. And that's how the world's moving. And despite some of its series that are woke and DEI not hitting the mark they feel they could, they don't care. In other words, they don't care that they're putting out woke garbage. Again, see rings of power. Let's hope this goes away of Fallout, which has massive issues. But it's well done, entertaining, and it's faithful in its look and premise versus Rings of the Power, a clear money grab that was nothing there, nothing more than to a weak wokeism who they thought would flock to it, but it's the conservative nerds who love their mythology, love it down to a detail, meaning don't change crap. And on top of that, they had a DEI for it. I think this is going to be a hit or miss series or situation. Running down number 8, Sam Bankman Fried faces solitary confinement after unauthorized interview. So for those of you who aren't aware, Sam Bankman is the former CEO of FTX. He was placed in solitary confinement. He's in prison for 25 years for screwing people out of billions. He's in the same place with Diddy. In fact, he knows Diddy. He's talked to Diddy. But he had an unapproved interview with Tucker Carlson, and that brought up the issue of prison regulations and potential motives. The prison said, look, it violated strict Bureau of Prison rules on inmate communication. It led to his immediate transfer to solitary confinement. Now, why did this happen? The interview where SBF expressed cautious optimism about Trump's influence on crypto, but he hinted more at Republican connections, doubled down on his pardon odds at Polymarket's giving, because his family's trying to leverage Trump's transactional approach. What does Trump get out of it if he gets clemency? Here's the problem. He's trying to make claim that he's actually more of a conservative. He's dealt more with Republicans. And he appealed that to Tucker Carlson. And all this conservatism is nothing but opportunism. Why? Because he's done nothing but fund Democrats, amass wealth also through deceit. And now he's caught and whining. He deserves the language in prison for exploiting trust and aiding in authoritarian agendas. Number 9, tragic end for Gene Hackman and Betsy Arakawa. It's a tale of isolation and disease. So, there we all know the deaths of legendary actor Gene Hackman and his wife, Betsy Arakawa. And that was discovered in February, late February, in their Santa Fe home. Poor, I'm really sad for the deceased pet dog. And it was a heartbreaking story. But there were natural causes compounded by isolationism and illness. And that's what New Mexico is saying. So, Betsy Arakawa, 65, was his caregiver. He was 95. She succumbed to hantavirus pulmonary syndrome, and that's a rare and often fatal respiratory illness, and it's transmitted through rodent contact. Odds are they had mice somewhere. And she died right around February 11th. And she, again, the sole caregiver. And her death unnoticed for days because they were not reclusive, but they were on their own. And Gene Hackman, 95, he died about a week later from hypertensive and a 3-sclerotic heart crap, cardiovascular disease, exacerbated by advanced Alzheimer's. He didn't know what to do. They probably didn't realize where he was at. It was like literally a 2-year-old toddler mentally. And that left him unaware of his wife's passing. I mean, like a 2-year-old child would be standing over the parent not realizing they're dead. He was probably a lot like that at this point. He had a lot of his dementia was really deep into its process. This is crazy how it transpired and sad. It makes logical sense, though. Rest in peace, Gene. You made us laugh, angered us, and made some of us cry based off your roles. But you are a testament to an old Hollywood belief that we want to remember you for acting and making us feel versus today's actors who we know more for their celebrity gossip than actual art and entertainment. God bless you as you begin your new journey and your wife, too. All right, let's close it out with my favorite comics. I no longer collect comics. I stopped collecting comics in 1993. I made a decision I needed money when I left the military. So, wow. 38 years now since I bought a comic book. And I used to have a massive collection. So, Diamond Comics bankruptcy. It signals a seismic shift in comics industry. So, what does this mean? Diamond Comics is a distributor. And they were the dominant. It wasn't technically a monopoly by definition, but it was a monopoly in reality. They filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy. And that's really changing how the industry works. They once had market dominance, a monopoly, but it waned. And then DC and Marvel and Image severed ties post-2020 pandemic because they kept saying they couldn't deliver this, couldn't deliver that. There were disruptions. They said, enough. We got to find somebody who can. They became omnipotent. I always forget how to pronounce it. Hold on 1 second. I got to figure this out. Now you got me pissed. Omnipotence. They got big heads, in other words. And they couldn't deal with that anymore, so they left them. And then everything after COVID kind of went to hell because they exposed themselves with vulnerabilities from late shipments and a shrinking direct market because the internet was destroying the once very profitable print business of comic books. It has major impact on small publishers. So this bankruptcy threatens smaller studios that are reliant on Diamond's distribution network. So because of delays, revenue, and reduced visibility, not only to Diamond when they do this and losing faith with the major players, the smaller market studios don't have the opportunity to generate the revenue they need to keep going. They can't survive like the DCs and the Marvels who can take a hit here or there. The smaller studios can't. So Lunar and Penguin and Random House, they're taking over. And this is nothing to do but Diamond's ignorance. My overall take on this is the internet flipped comics upside down. They're mirroring newspapers' decline. Diamond's collapse is a gut punch to those who cherish physical pages. The print days are numbered. Comics will go fully digital one day. Obviously, that will tank the collecting scene, too. They'll figure out a way to make it work, but there's something about holding that print in your hand. It's already done this for albums. So again, smaller studios will suffer from this distribution chaos and delays, cash delays. And while the big two weather the storm, This is doing nothing but hammering another nail into the print coffin, as in newspaper print, magazine print, comic print. That's a wrap on the Red, White, and Rude from Batman's In the Stall to Netflix's Privacy Flop. It's chaos out there, people. And we love it. It gives us news, and that's what we want. Well, we don't want bad news, but we like to entertain you. So what's your take? Is the Batman Part 2 doom, or is Electric State worth the stream? And what do you think of any of my comments on the rundown on Gene Hackman? Yeah, that's an interesting one. On the comic industry. Sam Bankman. Amazon's James Bond. You know, what do you think of Reddit? Let me know this in the comments section, as well as our social media platforms when you see this, or just if you want. And before I go, do not forget to like and share this podcast, The Red, White, and Rude. You can catch my other podcast, Conservative Talk, called Fired Up, Conservative Talk, focusing on California, Fired Up California, and my Points on the Board, where sports and politics collide. You can find all those podcasts at grumblingsmedia.com. Bookmark it, my friends. And do not forget, you can follow us at YouTube, Rumble, Apple, Spotify, y Pandora under the handle Grumblings Media. I am William Del Pilar. And until next week, for the Red, White, and Rude, I will see you next week.
Hey, everybody, this is Big John from Grumblings Media, and I just want to say thank you for watching our content. If you want to support our efforts here at Grumblings Media, just smash the subscribe button right here, totally free, or just go ahead and consume more of our great content. Click either one of these two boxes.